Hello, and welcome to part two of Public Words Project with Jalisa. So this is where we're going to continue with the laughter and the tears and the story of Jalisa and her path from then to now. Take a listen.
So one of the questions is, what makes you laugh? But I should change it to what makes you cry, because, girl, I'm fighting. Yeah, thank you so much for those kind words, and it was my honor.
It was fun.
So we're going to move on, because this is good. I'm not going to cry. So, got right on the right there. Pulled it back. Okay. So
what makes me laugh or what makes you cry?
So we're going to take it to something else. So what's your favorite food? Because that's something I ask everyone in this podcasting process.
That's a hard one because I really love food in general. but the first thing that popped in my head were tacos.
Good call.
Tacos. I'm a taco gal left and right. Taco in the morning, taco after dancing.
They have breakfast tacos now.
I know, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, Latinos have been doing it for years, but yeah, you know.
Yeah, there's a difference between the real breakfast tacos. Yeah. tacos are my favorite food. Generally, I mean, any day, any time.
All right, so are you street taco girl? Or
absolutely.
I like my fried shell sometimes. No, I like those.
Those aren't real tacos. Well, those are fake tacos.
I like both. Sometimes a good fried taco. I'm sorry. Taquitos are fried?
Taquitos are different than tacos.
Yeah, well, tacos. Okay.
Tacos. That's what the Latina is going to be like.
All right, so your favorite food. What's your favorite word?
Oh, I've never had that asked. I don't know.
What's your favorite word?
My favorite word.
Snap.
Nah. Ghetto me comes out. gosh, I guess I can say I have a lot of favorite words.
No, just one.
But
we can come back to that.
Yes, let's come back to that, because too many words are running through my head. And
what's your favorite book?
It's interesting. I have many, but one of the ones that I really like is Their Eyes Were Watching God. Our Eyes Were Watching God. I can't even remember the title.
Mm-hmm. What's it about?
I read it in 12th grade, and it was about this young lady, black young lady, who was growing up in poverty. And I don't remember most of the book. It's been so long since I've read it, mm-hmm. but she encountered poverty. She had to find herself. There was a lot of empowerment she needed to find, and she just went through this entire journey where, just remember, she ended up in the middle of a storm and just... She said the title of the book in it, and it really hit me. And I remember reading it over and over when I was in fifth grade and just reading it because it was just so touching. I wish I could remember more of it, but it was just an amazing story. And actually they made it into a movie, and Halle Berry is the leading actress.
Oh,
she's
okay.
The main character.
Okay.
Yeah. So I found it on YouTube last time. I'm always looking.
I'll have to check it out.
I think it was Nora Zeal. I forget her last name, but she wrote it.
So favorite book we answered. What makes you laugh? Besides me, you don't have to give me as an answer, because I know I'm funny and I make you laugh. Because
I laugh all the time.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know what?
When we're together, we get mischief and we laugh all the time. So, and if something odd's gonna happen, it usually happens to the two of us.
Yes. I think we saw people in cows last time. It was very weird. cow costumes. Very odd. But you know what?
What makes you laugh?
It's easy for me to laugh.
That's beautiful.
Genuinely, it's easy for me to laugh. And it could be something as, and I have a lot of dark humor. I'm a social worker, so forgive me. But something as someone tripping and falling could make me laugh hysterically.
Okay.
I've done it so many times. Unfortunately, at where I work, when the kids trip, it's hilarious to me. But that's a different story.
It's kind of dark, but okay.
It's kind of dark.
Yeah. It's very Laurel and Hardy-ish, I guess.
Forgive me. That's the dark humor in many, many of us social workers.
Well, you got to do what you got to do to survive, because that's some tough work. So.
but, you know, good jokes make me laugh. Good sitcoms. Really, Jenny, a lot of things make me
What's
laugh.
What's your favorite sitcom right now?
I don't have one right now, to be honest.
No.
No, I've been watching a lot of Grey's Anatomy. That's the opposite of sitcom. This is quite the opposite.
You know what's making me laugh right now is Murphy Brown. Do you remember the first series on CBS? They had Murphy Brown. You may be too young.
Yeah, I think so.
So they had Murphy Brown with Candace Bergen back in the day, and then they did it again this time, and she's aged gracefully, and
wow,
they brought the full cast back, and they're attacking the political climate right now with such intellect,
wow,
and taste. And I'm sure the Trump supporters won't get it, but
sounds like I need to watch Murphy Brown.
Yeah, it's funny.
I always need a good laugh.
It's funny and it's smart.
Okay.
And yeah.
Okay. Remember which show was thinking about the Puerto Rican family?
One Day at a Time. That's my other favorite sitcom.
My number one.
Yeah, yeah.
My number one.
They did. I liked the original one. Yes, because I'm that old. But
I just got it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Slow
reference. It's okay.
Processing.
Still yeah, I'm kind lag. Of just rolling like, oh God. So they redid it with it. They're Cuban, right?
Cuban. Sorry,
Rita Moreno's in it. And it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant. And it's encompassing. It just includes everybody. From the hipster to like the gay to like the Latino, Latina to the military. And it's just so brilliant. I love
mental
that show.
Mental health. Yeah. You name it.
Yeah.
Everything. It's amazing.
Oh, mental health. That's right. They're very vocal about mental health. Yeah.
PTSD. I mean, it's so common. And
someone has depression in the family, too.
I think so. Yeah. I think she may be dual diagnosis, depression and PTSD.
That's so professional. Dual diagnosis.
Dual diagnosis. You know, I put it out there sometimes, but I forget.
What's the code for that? What's that?
The V code or the axis? I don't know. No, axis is a previous diagnosis.
I was dating a lot of therapists at one point, so I knew all the lingo and the charts and stuff like that, but I haven't done that for a long time.
It's annoying. Yeah, it is.
What, the therapist, the people I was dating, or the chart?
Both.
Ooh, yeah, you could say that because you've been on that ride. So.
Skipping that one.
Yeah, you win. Score. So. Tell me a little bit how you landed into this career. Why this? Because you, God knows I advised you against it, but you seem to...
I'm pretty adamant about it. if anybody doesn't know me on this podcast, I'm pretty stubborn, and I kind of... Mm. It's very interesting. I listen. I do listen. But when I get in my head and I decide to do whatever I want and... I just kind of do it. Mm-hmm. And I always say that I have oppositional defiant disorder. I have self-diagnosed myself, yes.
That's okay.
But anyways, not to... I'll take yours. So I've been a natural helper.
Yeah, okay.
And that's naturally what I've done all the time. And once I was graduating from Cal State Fullerton, I went into sociology. When I was into sociology, I took other classes like sexual abuse, domestic violence, correction, and I was very intrigued by this, and I never understood why.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was at the School of Social Work, I realized like it's something that's always been my passion of helping people and really helping the most traumatized. And it can very much be linked to my family, my own trauma that I've experienced and traumas I've seen within the community.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was deciding, you know, here's USC and I'm being, you know, convinced, I was somehow convinced that this is a school I should go to and the only school I applied to, actually. Yeah. I looked at both curriculums of the Masters of Public Administration and Social Work, and Anne Marie and everybody else like do public administration. That's better marketing. It's, you know, this is where you've done all your nonprofit work, so you'll land perfectly in there.
And also, I'm gonna stop you. I was like, I'm friends with a lot of social workers, and they're still in debt. Remember, I was like, you are not gonna be able to match your salary to the debt. So
I still have it, and I'm getting myself in more debt. But we're not talking about that.
Well, you know, that's one thing that should be spoken about. Yeah. It's like, you know, there is a lot of, you know, we always tell our young folks to go. And even like people who are making career change, like education, continue with education. And it's so, that's why I like these online schools now, because they're making some of these graduate degrees more affordable, you know, for people who can't go. But it's just like, there is a responsibility with education. So when you tell, that's like when I was talking to you, I'm like, look, I know 4 social workers. I went to USC. That's why I...
We're in debt.
Well, I was telling you, they don't make that much money.
No. It's
It's, and that's the only reason I was just giving you my real world experience. No. I know you wanted to help people, but I also, my priority was you, not who you were going to help. And
absolutely. And so, I know, I agree.
And you're fine. You ended up fine. So I was wrong. For so now. I know. Own it.
For now.
yeah, I don't know if I was wrong, but I meant well. So
yeah, no, it's absolutely. Worked out for you. And it's, no, that's the reality. And it's funny you say that because I've talked to a few individuals who've expressed interest in social work and I've had that conversation with them. and I've told them the reality. I've told them, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat what social work is because one, we're underpaid, two, we're devalued undervalued, and three, it's work that where we have to hold space for individuals and take in all of their worries and all of their traumas and somehow tell them it's going to be okay and help them process that, and there's nobody helping us, and it's a profession that you burn out. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason, there's a lot of projection onto us, and sometimes we don't realize, and there's a lot of take care of yourself, self-care, but that's not actually promised, because when you try to take care of yourself, either you have family, that's the reality of your world, and you have to take care of them as well, aside mm-hmm. from yourself, mm-hmm. and then work actually will penalize you if you take care of yourself. So it's like, well, this is ironic, but anyways, it's the American dream, as I say, is very expensive, and the American dream is not truly the American dream. It's, to me, it's really just, you're going to get it in debt for the rest of your life, no matter what situation you're in, because this is our reality. Mm-hmm. That's going very dark. But anyways, going back to the original reason. So I read the public administration curriculum and it bored the life out of me. I was like, I'm not going through school to a master's program that I actually don't want to go to and applying to something that I really genuinely don't even see myself in. And then I saw the master's of social work, and USC happened to have the only one that I wanted to do, where it was, they had the military concentration. So I know I am mm-hmm. not a veteran. I am very, just have a lot of friends who are in the military. That's why I was very passionate about being part of that. So just want to make that clear.
And they're hot.
And they're hot. Of course they are. But stepping away from that.
Yeah. Well, okay, they shared too much. Okay, stop. Okay.
Some of them are. Others aren't. Intellect has something to do that with now. But aside from that, really, there was this whole cycle of that I was particularly interested in terms of deployment and what that looked like in terms of a parent leaving and integrating into the family, and really, and how that affected the family. Yeah. So that was really a lot of what I wanted, the work and the research I wanted to do, and the reason why I went into the school of social work. And aside from that, this is part of my dream still, of opening my nonprofit nationally and internationally, specifically in Guatemala. So I knew that the School of Social Work provided that option as well, mm-hmm. of having that concentration that was targeted for nonprofit work. So I wanted to do that, of course, because I would find the freaking school that would provide everything that I needed at that time. So I really wanted to do that. And that's how I ended up as a social worker, and where I've ended up now working with the kids. Again, by chance, and I was trying to get away from my other job and away from Lancaster, California, which where I'm back at right now.
Good old 14 freeway.
It's amazing what that 14 freeway does.
So much happens on that 14 freeway. And if you're not from California, 14 freeway is one of the 14 freeway was created because everyone moved out of LA because it was so expensive, and they moved to Lancaster.
And Palmdale, Bakersfield, what we call the Antelope Valley, and Kern County area.
So everyone went out there and bought houses because back in the day, there was no traffic. So that was only a 40-minute drive.
Now it's a 2-hour drive. It's dark and people drive like maniacs, and there are a lot of very deadly car accidents.
And that's the only way to get out of Southern California to go to Mammoth is through 14 to the 14 snakes out, and then it drops you off, and then you know takes you into the desert, takes you to Lancaster, and then takes you to one of the most beautiful highways, 395 in California. So if you're listening and you ever want to go on a nice drive in California, take 395 north. Just try to avoid the 14.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
right?
Good luck with that.
Let's take the 5 and cut across like Isabella, but now we're giving you too much California information. So back to this. How comfortable are you public speaking? Because I know certain things about you, but I want you to answer that right now. Because I know I've asked you to speak a couple times.
And yes.
Tell me.
So I've gotten better at it. I'm a lot more comfortable than what you have seen me do.
Good.
And I'm really proud of doing that. And it really generally started with 12th grade with the Unity Club. Mm-hmm. And it combined with the work that I did with you, Anne-Marie. Mm-hmm. And then it was just kind of side by side. And I was kind of forced, kind of in...
In a very loving manner, forced
to public speak in many during many occasions, which I stuttered and I would be red, sweating, you name it, every anxiety provoking, you know, somatic symptom or bodily symptom.
But you always did it. Whenever I asked, you always did it. You never fought me, and I'm really proud of you for that.
Thanks.
Because it built you to this.
It did, and so now it became a little more solid when I was part of a wellness team, and I became a wellness coach, if you will, and I had to run workouts.
All those damn what are those races you do in the mud and the
Spartan races?
Yeah, there you go.
Spartan races, mud run races with obstacles, and then I led workouts with 50 people and doing military style. Yes, there's a military trend here, guys. Yeah. And then
well, that's definitely public speaking when you're coaching like that.
And I had to speak very loud and had to be very authoritative. And then I run groups.
I'm so proud of you.
Thanks. Yeah, and I run groups now.
With small group communication.
Small group with teenage boys who are incarcerated. Who are incarcerated, so...
That's why it's so good to have a sense of humor when you're in the professional world, because your sense of humor, one's sense of humor can help one survive many, many, many things, especially something as daunting and as important as what you're doing.
It's madness. Thank you. Yeah, it's madness.
But, you know, you're trying to save these young lives and get them redirected, and it's God's work. It really is.
Thanks. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. It's sad many times, most times, but it's... We're there, pushing, fighting the good fight.
Yes, ma'am, fighting the good fight.
Indeed, no, they're a special breed of kids.
So, we talked about what makes you laugh, how you landed in this career, you're comfortable public speaking. So what's your favorite word? We need to go back to that.
Oh, right. You see, I still didn't think about my favorite. But right now, the word that came into my head was empower.
That's a great word.
So, I mean, I could think of so many social justice, but it's
we'll go with
empower.
Empower? Okay, so that's what we're going to imprint on your podcast.
Empower.
Empower. That's good.
That's good.
So... Do you feel any pressure or circumstances around being you in public speaking or presenting at work or in public?
Absolutely. Oh, gosh. I'm young. I look younger than my actual age. Mm-hmm. I'm brown.
What?
Yeah.
You're Mexican, right?
Okay, look. Like I say, you know, we are in Los Angeles, and there's a lot of Mexicans around, and I love my Mexican people. I'm Guatemalan, Central America.
Guatemalan.
So they're Guatemala.
This is a joke between Jaleesa and I, because absolutely. I'm just a dumb California girl, Mexican girl, Mexican-American, Afro-Puerto Rican, whatever the hell I am. And I just thought everyone was Mexican growing up in California, in LA, because I didn't know any better.
Oh, she got a lecture from me.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And, you know, well-deserved. I'm not denying it. So, well-deserved. Well-deserved.
But for that reason, too, yeah. I think a lot... wait, can you repeat the question? I lost it in the...
I sidetrack people, I know. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Did you or do you feel any pressure or circumstances around being you and public speaking or presenting at work or in public?
Yes. That was a question. Yes, absolutely. And again, due to my phenotype, how I look and how I am bubbly, and I kind of dance to my own tune. And it's hard because this is a conversation I have a lot with my best friend Asia. It's people try to put us in a box, mm-hmm. and society wants us to be a certain way, or wants me to be a certain way, and I can't be dominant. I have to be submissive. I can't have my own opinions. I should have been married by now and have at least had a kid, and should I'm educated. I am in a doctoral program and I have a master's degree. What? I actually have something intelligent to say? Oh my God, these are just mind-blowing factors. So having that and saying that, you know, absolutely have all of those things. I have all that pressure, and it's hard because I have to always be fighting my position, and I'm constantly told, Julissa, stop saying what you need to say. Stop, you know, telling us your opinions. And I'm just like, but why? And I challenge a lot. Mm-hmm. And I've been told you should act a certain way because only then that's how you're going to gain respect. But it's like, I should gain respect regardless of how I act or how I am and who I am.
Well,
and
how one acts. I mean, if you walk around with a feather sticking on top of your head or like farting everywhere you go.
True. I mean, respect in my own capacity, and I'm talking about myself, and I'm not wearing a feather all the time and farting around. Well, unless I have to.
No, I'm not saying. Kidding. I mean, there's people listening. I also want to be like, there is some responsibility.
There's responsibility about appearance, and there absolutely, and I completely agree. Yes. I completely agree. Appearance is a huge thing, and that's our reality, and, mm-hmm. and how we present ourselves and how we are is going to give someone a perception of us.
Right.
But
that's the only reason I put that out there.
Because yeah. No, rightfully so. Rightfully so. And I don't want to give the wrong message at all. But but because things can be perceived in a different way. Mm-hmm. But I meant for myself of mm-hmm. how just because of how I look and how I am. And that's a constant thing that I've had to fight. And mm-hmm. because I mean, I've had this from my own family members. You speak English with a Spanish accent, so you should be speaking more American. I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means.
I
don't understand.
I don't understand either.
You sound fine.
Yeah, well, apparently I don't speak English well enough.
And for everyone listening and for what you just said, and from me to you, that is someone else's deal. That's not your deal.
Someone else's deal. But it's still something I have to fight. Constantly.
Right. No, good point. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So that's the only reason why I bring it up, because that's the reality. That's mm-hmm. the reality of where I'm at, regardless of my job, regardless of environment, regardless of, it doesn't matter where I'm at. Home, mm-hmm. job, school, amongst peers. It's really a pressure of how the presentation comes and what I look like and everything. So it's really, it's those pressures are always very real for me. And I have to be, for me specifically, I have been placed in a high pedestal. And I can say that for myself. And so.
Who placed you on this pedestal?
Just different expectations from different people. And I've allowed that to happen where I've allowed myself to feel, not to feel, but to look at my way like I have to be in a certain pedestal or a certain, act a certain way. Like there's no room for mistakes. There's a sense of I have to be perfect. I can't mess up.
And you know, there's this theme that's running through all these podcasts and everyone I've talked to, and it's like, and it's a theme that I've been dealing with is perfectionism. Mm-hmm. It's really a hindrance. It's not a help. It's a hindrance.
No.
And it often stops people from doing things because like, I will not do it until it's perfect. Well, there's no such thing as perfect. So get off of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And, you know, during all the religious schools I went to, the one thing they beat into your head is there's no such thing as perfect. And I was like, well, then why does the word exist? You know, even as a child, there's no such thing as perfect. Why does the word exist? Mm-hmm. And again, it's man's kind interpretation and management of whatever.
Self
and trying of others and controlling of others and using language to control and cooperate. But anyway, so I, as you've known me for a long time, I've said this over and over again because I really want people to understand, you can't let perfectionism hold you back. Do the best you can and be as smart as you can and just do it. And then when it doesn't work out, figure it out. Do a workaround. If something doesn't work, figure it out. Work it out. And then in your situation about what's happening with you, the perfectionism or the altar or the pedestal, as you mentioned, that you're on, only you are keeping yourself up there. You know, Only you.
Only me.
I mean, honestly, because it's like, because I don't want you to beat yourself up, and I don't want people who are in that same similar situation. You be you, and that's you're saying that.
Easier said than done.
You're saying that.
Yeah.
No. You're saying it, and you're trying to get there because I'm listening to you, and you're getting there. But it also it's like, at the same time, the expectations and being yourself. It's such a clash. It's such a dance we all do, no matter what age, with family, society, peers. Yeah. Intimate people in our families, intimate people in our circle, mm-hmm. people we get naked around. That's a whole nother podcast.
It's a whole other.
But it's just like, you know, so it's that, you know, it's about not letting that perfectionism and it's, you know, I sound almost like I'm contradicting myself. It's like image does matter and representation does matter, but then I'm saying be yourself and don't worry about perfectionism. So it's like, life is complicated and it's messy and it's wonderful, and this is just kind of like why we exist, to talk about these things, you know. So
I agree. Everything's not black and white, and that's the one thing that grad school showed me, my first round of grad school.
You know, I didn't go to grad school because I didn't want to pay for grad school.
Yeah, nobody wants to pay for grad school.
My parents are like, we got your bachelor's, you can get your, you can buy your master's. I'm like, nope, that's okay.
The crazy part is most bachelors, at least I don't know how my hope is to learn about the different systems, university systems in other states, but at UCs and Cal States, granted, I am very aware that it depends on your income. It can be free for some of us, really depending on socioeconomic status, and just one number can mess that up for many of us. And that happened to me. Like, I mean, my parents, according to the government, made, I think, a few hundred dollars too much, and they cut off all my financial aid. So
wow.
It's crazy because it's like, well, what am I supposed to do? And thank goodness, and thank God for Cal State Fullerton having a scholarship that they gave me, where I earned, I don't know, but it was there, and that's how I was able to cover school. But it's crazy because we can afford it.
My parents paid for my education, which I'm very, very grateful for. But then I think I was just too young to understand and take on that financial portion of a graduate degree.
It's not an easy one because I met a student in my current graduate program who decided not to pursue the doctoral program because of the loans, and it's a lot of money. And I mean, just from USC, many of us graduated with $160,000 in debt. I think that was the maximum. Mm-hmm. And then
that's a real number.
That's a real $160,000. I mean, as social workers, our minimum is, I think, 48, 45. Some people have been offered $42,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And how do you pay $160,000? And let's not forget all those interests.
they tend to forget that.
It's a real issue. It's because that's the reason why. I mean, quality of life here isn't getting any cheaper.
No, not in Los Angeles County.
And the expenses are high, and that's why many of us have to revert back to going to live with our families because we can't afford it. Mm-hmm. It's impossible.
Yeah,
it's really impossible. And I know we moved away from the question, but
no, that's okay. That's fine. That's the way it rolls with a Public Words Project. So what advice do you have for people who are looking to be better public speakers or better presenters? From your point of view, what advice do you have for people who are looking to be better public speakers or presenters?
Practice.
Okay.
Practice, practice, practice. Have people in your corner who are supporting you through the process of public speaking. Ask for pointers and be open to them.
Okay.
Be confident in yourself. I think that's one of the biggest things, because mm-hmm. when we go up to speak, we're the one that knows what we're presenting on.
Right? That's what I keep telling everybody. Stop reading your damn PowerPoints. You know what it's on there.
You know what's on there. And granted, and that's the thing with like anxiety, you know, when you... And not having the confidence within yourself. And granted, it rolls through a whole bunch of other things. But it's hard, especially when we think that other people are criticizing us. Mm-hmm. It's really hard, and to have those self-doubts and the catastrophizing all the time. And I'm one of those individuals, especially when I'm not confident in the topic I have to present on. That's the worst. Yeah. I will read off that PowerPoint. No shame in my game. That is what it is. But it's also, if you're going to read off that PowerPoint, know how to read and communicate with your audience. And that's a skill that's not, you don't learn overnight, and you have to practice. Mm-hmm. And just know that and use your voice. I mean, this is one thing I tell my kids all the time. You have a voice, use it. And mm-hmm. when you're up presenting, that is your voice that's being heard, and that is your brand. So what you're going to be saying out there matters, and mm-hmm. your voice matters. So you're not just up being a public speaker, just saying nothing. You're saying something, and that's why you were maybe even invited, or you were the person who was selected for that specific topic. So, no, I think that those are a few words that I can say in terms of public speaking.
good. So what advice would you give to your kid self?
To my kid self. Wow. That's going to get me emotional.
Well, you don't have to answer it if it's going to get to you to that point.
No, it's okay. I think that one thing is, it's okay to have feelings.
I think that's another thing we've been having on the podcast. Yeah.
It's okay to have feelings, and it's okay to cry, and it's okay to explore, and it's okay to take risks. Mm-hmm. And it's okay not to be okay. It's also okay to put yourself first. And that's it's a big one. It's okay to put yourself first.
Jesus, you're so wise for your age. it's taking me years to get to that point.
I'm working through that now, and sometimes we carry so much for our families. I'm the firstborn in my family, at least in America. I'm the firstborn. So I had to carry a lot. I'm kind of the navigator. I'm everything. With the navigator of systems, the translator, the caretaker, yep. You name it, pretty much I've done it all. If only we can put that on my resume, it'd be great. But, you know, here we are.
That's a reality. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of young folks of your similar background are really mature and responsible. And there's just this other image that's happening. It's just it's sad. But anyway.
It is. Yeah.
But back to absolutely. The question, what advice would you give to your kid self?
So using that, it's okay if you didn't wash the dishes. Like, it's okay if you decided to play. Mm-hmm. And it's okay that things are happening. Like, that's the thing, and it's not your fault. And I think, saying that out loud is, like, harder than thinking it to yourself, but...
That's the power of words.
The power of words, yeah. The power of saying things out loud and speaking to yourself and... Not like a crazy person, but just like genuinely speaking to yourself, right? Giving your own positive affirmations and give yourself your own positive affirmations. I think, like, I know that that's one thing for me that I wish I would have told myself more. And really, I wish I would have told myself even that 2 years ago, mm-hmm. Because I probably wouldn't have gotten myself in many situations I've been in and would have taken better care of myself and really just had even better attachments and better relationships and really been able to, I mean, not that I find that you have to be with a human, but like establish relationships, you know, like with other human beings in a positive way as opposed to having bad attachments. Like, and really, if I would have told myself that as a kid, I would have been, my autonomy would have been better and I would have been able to better self-explore, growing up and as a kid and found myself, my true self, and not lost myself in the identity of my family. So if there's anything, I think it would have been a little bit of all those words.
Excellent. So we're going to wrap this podcast up right now. And at the end of each podcast, I always ask my guests to share, what word would you like to leave with the audience? What word would you like the audience to leave with right now?
Well, this is different from my favorite word.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I asked.
Oh, wait, we can't end yet. You still haven't told me your favorite. Yeah, no, you did.
I did. Empower.
Yeah. So then this is different. This is different. What word would you like to leave with the audience?
Peace.
There you go. Peace. That's a good word. Yeah. Inner peace, outer peace, world peace.
Just peace all around.
Peace. So, It's been an honor to do this podcast with you, and thank you so much for being so honest, brilliant, vulnerable, smart, everything.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right.
All right.
Love you.
You too. Peace.
Word.
Word.